Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This is my mission, and I will complete it.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and we choose to accept our mission as well. Hello, and welcome to Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. I am your co-host, Mark Blankenship, and with me, resplendent in the regalia befitting the 41st President of the United States and all of his compatriots, it's Sarah D. Bunting. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. I'm not sure if that means that I am wearing what I would have been wearing, which is one of those ubiquitous Benetton rugby shirts, or something with giant shoulder pads, or if I'm falling down an elevator shaft. Who knows? In any case, hello.
Diana Muldar style.
Hello. Hello, listeners, and welcome to our Beats Around the Bush season. LOL. How did we get here and what are we doing? Well, we're not totally sure what we're going to be doing the whole time, but here's where it started. We wanted to do a radio hip hop season of just like party jams that you used to bug out to, like in carpool or in your dorm room or wherever, kind of between 85 and 95. So we made a big list of songs, and it was like, well, were these radio jams, or does it count if only I love them and I want to bring them to the listenership and nothing ever charted here? And what is our framework? So what we realized is that most of the songs that we wanted to talk about came from the era of the first Bush presidency, 88 to 92-ish. Some of them are from before, when he was vice president, so we're counting it. And they're all rap and hip-hop, so beats around the Bush. This is either my greatest pun triumph, or I need to fire myself. Maybe it's both. Who can say? But basically, we're just talking about these amazing, joyous hip-hop songs that we love, some of which disappeared randomly. Others, you may never have heard of them. Others, you've definitely heard of, but we're just going to go on a journey with them again. We're not totally sure what our episode list is going to be, because some of you on our Patreon page at patreon.com/mastass are going to help us figure out what we're talking about later in the season. But that's where it began. Mark, anything to add about our general brief, teehee brief, before we get into what we're specifically digging in on today?
I will say that I mean it as a compliment when I say that Beats Around the Bush is such a stupid title for this season.
Yeah, but stupid, like in the hip-hop sense that it's stupid. Yes. Good and a question mark? No.
I just feel very liberated that that's what we're calling it, because it just sets the table for how we're going to be approaching this whole project of this mini season. And I'm ready to just get loose and get funky.
You're always funky in my heart.
That's because I use natural deodorant.
So do I. It doesn't really work, but we work.
Oh no, who am I kidding? I basically just use actual aluminum that I dig from the ground and rub into my body. But anyway.
Those squeaky sounds that you hear are sheets of tinfoil in his armpits, ladies and germs.
That's exactly right, ladies and gentlemen. So on this first episode, well, let me back up and say this. So basically the way we're structuring this season is that for the first few weeks, we're going to do an episode that I bring to the table, then an episode that Sarah brings to the table. We'll go back and forth doing that for a while, and then we will start to do some episodes that come from you, the listeners. And if you are a Patreon patron, you should keep your eyes peeled for questions from us that will help us shape our listener-guided episodes. And I'm going to be kicking things off in Beats Around the Bush with an episode dedicated to what I am generally calling hippy dippy hop.
We called it hippy hop when I was in college.
Yes, so I love a group of songs that were popular from the late 80s until 93. And technically, George H.W. Bush was president for the first few days of 1993, so it counts. They are unified by their general relaxed vibe. They have very different lyrical themes. Some of them are quite serious. Some of them are just about having a good time. But they all tend to have a very mellow energy. By the 93 period, they also include a lot of jazz samples. And they really represent a very different fork in the hip-hop road when compared to the gangster rap fork that Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Ice Cube, all of those guys were traveling down. And I think it can be easy when we look back at the era of late 80s, early 90s hip hop to only tell the story of gangster rap and to forget about this type of music, just in the same way that when we talk about early 90s rock music, we can talk about grunge as though that's all there was, and we forget about REM and 10,000 Maniacs and the Gin Blossoms. And I just am excited to kick off this season by looking at this group of songs. For those of you who have been listening to this show for a while, perhaps you won't be shocked to learn that I really like these songs and that this is definitely my go-to hip-hop lane for the early 90s. But I know, you know, as Popeye says, I am what I am. So today we're going to be talking about De La Soul's Me, Myself, and I, Arrested Development's Mr. Wendell, Us Three's Cantaloupe, parentheses, Flip Fantasia, PM Dawn's Looking Through Patient Eyes, and Digable Planet's Rebirth of Slick, parentheses, Cool Like That. So I hope that you are wearing a velour shirt. I hope that you were wearing glasses with some sort of colored lens. Mm-hmm. And I hope that you are ready to feel good even as you think deep thoughts.
Yeah. Get out those Zubaz and a hacky sack. It's time to go.
So, Sarah, I'd love to start by just talking about who the song Me, Myself, and I by De La Soul, because I really feel like this particular song is the progenitor of this entire sound. This is a song that came out in the late 80s, and fun fact, it is the first ever Top 40 song that was only available on cassette single and not on a 45.
Wow.
Do with that what you will. And before we go any further, I think we should get ourselves into the whole vibe of this episode by listening to a clip of Me, Myself, and I by De La Soul.
God, yes. Let's do it.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Tell me, mirror, what is wrong? Can it be my De La clothes or is it just my De La Soul? What I do ain't make-believe. People say I sit and try, but when it comes to being De La, it's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I. It's just me, myself, and I.
Ugh.
I have a serious question for you, Sarah. Serious yes. question. Is it possible when this song is playing to be in a bad mood?
No, it isn't. I mean, I came into this in a pretty good mood because I've been psyched about this season for like 4 months. But if I weren't in a good mood, I would be in one after just 34 seconds of that song. Here's my only issue with preparing this episode is that while I was listening to that song again, which, like, I've heard it conservatively 7,000 times, but, you know, listening to it again, hadn't heard it in a while, and could not get out of the album. Could not get out. It was just, like, skipping around on it, listening to it, realizing I could still recite the entire, like, you know, the little game show breaks?
Yes,
and, like,
yes.
That I sometimes say things from the game show bits, like as like just conversational filler or like responses to things that I don't think I even realized I was either doing it or still doing it. Like anytime someone says freaks, that's my excuse to be like, just like your mama, because bloodsucking freaks, just like your mama. And sometimes I'll come into a room and be like, how you doing, Al? I like Twizzlers. I mean, I can't stop doing it even now. That whole album, top to bottom, is so, it's like a giant shaker knit sweater of nostalgic joy for me. And I remember like buying the cassette of the whole album and putting it on and just being like, this is, I mean, this is perfectly done. I'm having so much fun, and you can hear them having so much fun. And it's such a relatable, like, I don't know, that they're just like, this is what we do, and we're doing it 115%. And if it becomes a like mainstream success, great. And if it doesn't, we're going to just keep doing it. And that was really appealing to me and still is wonderful to me.
I completely agree with you. One of the things that I love about this song and their whole vibe from this period is that they were very much rebellious, iconoclastic hip hop artists, but they weren't, as the kids would say, pressed about it.
Yeah.
They named their album 3 Feet High and Rising, which tells you that they're baked. They're not mad, but they're also not going to do what you tell them they have to do to make the music that they want to make. And there's something that's so appealing about people who don't get that upset when they're ignoring your rules. I just find that kind of confidence very appealing. And it is so much fun because they're not worried about impressing you. That leaves them free to just have a good time. And you know, this whole record, Me, Myself, and I, is a boastful, braggadocious record, but it doesn't sound like what I feel like we're trained to think a boastful, braggadocious record sounds like. They're like, yeah, my spectacles are cool, my point of view is cool, and you might think I'm a nerd, but I don't give a fuck.
And ba-da-da-da. Then, like, Q-Tip is just like, he has like one line, black is black.
Yes.
And it's like, he's on the track for like 3 seconds, but it's unmistakably Q-Tip in such a wonderful way. And even though they don't necessarily give a shit what we think, they give a shit what they think.
Yes,
it's the
good, well said.
They don't take themselves that seriously, but they take the making of this music extremely seriously. And if you listen to any track on this album, or really any of their albums, like, there is some just sort of like C+ fuck around interstitial shit on other albums, but if you listen to Say No Go, and like any 30 seconds of Say No Go is so dense with allusion, samples, the way that samples are like either pitched up or down, like sped up or slowed down, the things that they're doing like 360 on any given track on this album are like, I mean, you know, yeah, it's fun, but it's also not like unprofessional. The teacher's not here and we're just going to get baked and watch a film strip. Like, this is
right.
Good work product. So yeah,
that's exactly right. It is that idea of, I love what you said. They don't care what you think about them, but they care what they think about themselves. And mm-hmm. They care what they think about the world, and they take themselves seriously enough as artists to want to do a good job. And that this is clearly, like you said, it's not just a lark. This is the worldview that they wanted to create. And it just happens that the worldview that they want to create is kind of a loose and relaxed party that uses samples as a way of paying homage, but also building this really new soundscape. And, you know, again, all hip hop is rooted in the idea of sampling, but this is just a different way of using sampling to create a different type of energy and to tell a different type of story. And I think that's really cool. And I also am reminded, as you mentioned, Q-Tip's one line, that he also shows up the next year in D-Light's Groove Is in the Heart for that guest verse.
Uh-huh.
And I love the idea that, for whatever reason, Q-Tip was just always at the Brooklyn party where they had a studio set up in the back, and he would always just be walking through with a cup of Hunch Punch at just the right moment, and they would be like, yo, Q-Tip, come here. And he'd be like, oh, okay, hold this. And he would just rap, and then he would leave. And I just love the image of Q-Tip happened to be there, and he just did this and left.
Yeah, or that these groups would be like, it's like 2:30 in the morning, they're like, oh my god, I just can't. with that, like, we're blocked, we don't know what to do. So they would put like the bat signal, except in the shape of a Q-tip, on the side of a building. And he would look out his window and be like, oh.
Yeah, hold on. I've got my pajamas on, but give me 1 second.
Yeah.
Now, talking about this whole ethos, the creation of a sort of relaxed style, the use of hip-hop sampling to create something that feels more textured and sensuous than perhaps other artists were doing, leads us quite directly to PM Dawn, who I would argue are obvious descendants of De La Soul, even though their album only came out like their first album only came out 2 years later. But PM Dawn at the time got a lot of flack from the hip hop community because they were considered soft. And Prince B, who was the lead rapper and primary songwriter of the group that he was in with his brother, DJ Minute Mix, sampled Joni Mitchell songs and George Michael songs to make his music. He sampled pop and folk music that wasn't necessarily cool or embraced in the way that other hip hop samples were. He talked openly about Jesus. He talked about weeping and crying a lot. Things that artists like Drake are doing now, PM Dawn were doing decades in advance, and it was very, very, very frowned upon. And famously, PM Dawn or Prince B said in a magazine interview that he thought that KRS-One was not a good role model, even though KRS-One framed himself as a teacher for his listeners. And then KRS-One rushed Prince B on the stage of, I think it was at an award show, but it was after some performance, and he knocked Prince B down. And so there was this whole thing of like the hip hop community rejects PM Dawn, but PM Dawn continued to make music, and for quite a few years they continued to have hits. So they are the first artist to have a number one in the SoundScan era with Set Adrift on Memory Bliss, which samples True by Spandau Ballet, hardly the hardest sample that you could have chosen.
No.
Then they had a hit with the song I Die Without You, which reached number three. That was from the Boomerang soundtrack. And then in 93, they released this song, which reached number six on the Hot 100. And I remember so clearly playing when my grandfather drove me back from the regional spelling bee, which is neither here nor there. But this is a sample, this is a clip of Looking Through Patient Eyes, a song that samples Father Figure by George Michael and features pop diva Kathy Dennis on backing vocals. So here we are, number six hit, Looking Through Patient Eyes.
I think I'm close, but I stand so far. The turbulent one sheds a turbulent tear. I miss the love only cause they stop. Oil and water, lust and sympathy are life and death. My way through the sun, where originates all the pain that leaves my memory a traumatic sponge and sinks to you. Of love, reason.
Now, Sarah, what I will say I can see clearly in retrospect is that the reason I loved PM Dawn, that I have set up learning all the words to this song and many others, is because this was hip-hop music that didn't make me feel like I was going to get the shit kicked out of me for being gay. I can, like, just, it's so clearly in retrospect the place that hip-hop, and in fact all of the songs we're talking about today, were places where as a gay kid I could listen and not feel afraid in a way. And
right.
I loved this music for the very things that other artists and other people criticized it for. And this song is so lush and it's so queer in its way. I don't even think Prince B was a gay or a queer man, but like the album art was just so like over the top. And there's just something so extra about all of it. But I loved it and I love it still. But I wonder, did you know this song before this week?
I don't remember it at all. If you say it charted, obviously I, you know, believe you, but I just
did, I swear.
I have absolutely no reason to confront you with an incorrect chart fact. But I have no recollection of it. And this was, this one was a little hard for me to get purchase on, because I feel like this is one of those cases where the sample is doing so much of the work. Like, excellent choice of sample on their part, but this did feel a little reliant on work that George Michael had already done. With that said, I think that PM Dawn definitely was this. I mean, I love that you said that this felt like it was hip hop that was not going to get you, that was not going to see you harmed. Because it's really interesting to look at PM Dawn specifically sort of trying to be at an intersection of hip hop and the R&B of the era, or like sort of proto New Jack stuff, which was definitely much more about like very het fucking. Right? So this is much more sort of like spiritual. There's like, it's coded for intimacy, but not necessarily physically. It's like spiritual and emotional, which I think the culture in a lot of ways still is not ready for men to be vulnerable about intimate feelings.
Yes.
So especially in like whatever, 92, 93, if your choice was like John Seda standing in a carport with his shirt unbuttoned, singing about how much he loved you, which actually meant I want to bone you, or Michael Stipe, who weighed like 110 pounds with angel wings on, being like, everything is terrible, you broke my heart. Like, these intimacy codes were not adequate, maybe, for the full range of human expression.
Right.
And I can see how PM Dawn would have caused anxiety in other artists. And like, I think that whenever artists are called soft or cheesy or mall music or whatever, like sometimes that's a legit critique, but usually it's a reactive anxiety. And
yes,
that PM Dawn would absolutely, like, I don't think anybody was under the impression that George Michael was actually making out with these models that were already, that were always in his videos. So for PM Dawn to embrace this very recognizable sample and stick very close to the architecture of the original sampled song is quite brave, and both not innovative and very innovative.
Yes.
But like, the song itself, I'm kind of like, okay. Like, I see what you're doing and I'm glad you did it, but I don't necessarily need to listen to this one again.
You know, it's interesting because I can remember very clearly being excited when this song reached the top 10, because it felt like PM Dawn bucking the odds, because the backlash had already begun against them when they released this album, and they leaned even harder into the Baroque sensuality of their look. And I don't know if you watched the music video for this song.
Mm-mm.
Well, Prince B is wearing a black lace veil and wearing a giant shirt that says Jesus on it, while Kathy Dennis walks around in another veil holding a lit candle. Like, there's just, it is so extra. And in the album art, he is in a long blue sarong sitting on an orange sort of sandy looking wave, pointing longingly at the sky. I mean, they are not trying to make it less queer. And
no.
There is also a song on this album called the Bliss album, but then it's the Bliss album with a question mark at the end. The Bliss album, where they sing a duet with Boy George.
Okay.
And it's like a sad, beautiful song. And all of the lyrics you may have clocked in this, they're just all like eighth grade poetry. In fact, I'm going to tell on myself, I wrote out the bridge of that Boy George duet and pretended like it was a poem I had written and then showed it to someone in eighth grade.
Well, look, middle school was a dicey time.
It was. I don't know why I did that. It is inexplicable to me why I would pass that off. I was writing my own bad poetry. Why did I have to take PM Dodds that day? I don't know. Anyway, point being, this is, I totally get how it might, if you're just hearing it now for the first time, or maybe you heard it and it just made no impression on you, also possible, that might not be your jam, but it arrived in my life at just the right moment, and I'm here for it. Now, I'm not mistaken, you do remember Mr. Wendell from Arrested Development, is that correct?
I definitely do, and it's, oh my god, it's so of its time, but I mean, I don't think I'd heard it in 25 years. And it was, yep. I mean, it really was like a college reunion in some ways. You're like, oh, great. And then once you've gotten caught up with the song, you're like, okay, see you in whatever, 2045. Like, almost kind of all set. Do you want to hear a clip or do you have comments first?
I'll give you some background first. Arrested Development is the first rap act to win the Grammy for Best New Artist, which they did in 1993. This is the third top 10 hit from their first and only hit album, whose name I can't ever get right. It's like 3 years, 4 weeks, 2 days in the life of, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The first hit was Tennessee with Dion Ferris, who we recently talked about in the Lilith season, singing the hook. Tennessee is a great song.
That's Dion Ferris. Dion
yes, that's
Ferris.
Dion Ferris.
Follow the bouncing ball and not Sarah. It's Dion Ferris.
Then they had a second hit called People Every Day. But I just felt like that Mr. Wendell really epitomizes for good and for ill the whole Arrested Development thing.
Yes.
So that's why I felt like it was the perfect one to choose. This song reached number six, just like Looking Through Patient Eyes. And in case you haven't heard it, it is a song in which Speech, the leader of Arrested Development, raps about a homeless person that he is looking at on the street, and here's how that sounds.
Are we really civilized? Yes or no? Who are we to judge? When thousands of innocent men can be brutally enslaved or killed over a racist grudge. Mr. Wendell has tried to warn us about our ways, but we don't hear him talk. Is it his fault when we've gone too far? And we got too far, because on him we've walked. Mr. Wendell, a man, a human in flesh, but not by law. I bid you dignity to stand with pride. Realize that all in all, you stand tall. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell.
Mr. Wendell. Speech's vocal is so wonderful. I don't think this seemed as preachy at the time because I was, you know, 20.
Yep.
preachy was where I was fucking getting my mail because, you know. And like in 92, this felt much more like matter of fact and almost journalistic. And compared to, say, Natalie Merchant / 10,000 Maniacs output of the time, it did feel like you could have a conversation with Speech about this story versus being, you know, lectured. So that was great.
I hate to spoil your homecoming, but baby brother, you should expect me to.
I mean, and this guy, brother man, have two. Like, this is just such a friendly vocal. Speeches, timbre is like sexy, but not like sexy. Just like, it's a nice timbre. It's very agreeable. And, you know, this, like, it's a good beat. It carries you along. It's built really well. But this is a group that had a spiritual elder that was listed in album notes. Like, this is what you're dealing with. accept it or don't, they're doing this thing where they're like not just a group, they're a lifestyle. And you're like,
yes,
okay,
yes,
good, all right. As long as no one's like tithing to this guy, I'm sure it's fine. And even if they are, everyone's adults.
Everyone is adults, but this song feels like it was written by an eighth grader, which is what I was when it came out. Because there, I love, as we've often discussed on this show, I love this song like a family member, because it is so naive, but presents itself as being so profound. And I exactly remember that's how I was. And
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love it for that. But the lyric that I can...
I did not have the excuse of being in eighth grade at this time, but I was a sophomore, so...
So sophomoric, it's right there in the name.
Mistakes continued to be made all over the shop.
So I can remember very specifically later in my life hearing the song again and hearing the lyric. I didn't clip it, but there's a lyric in the song that goes, "His only worries are sickness and occasional harassment from the police in their chase. Uncivilized we call him, but I just saw him eat off the food we waste." And then we get to where I picked up the clip, where he's like, maybe the blind man is the one who truly sees, is basically what he's saying.
I do like, Mr. Wendell has tried to warn us. Like, the way that that line is delivered, and it still sustains today, I would say. Mr. Wendell has tried to warn us. Like, yeah, he did, repeatedly.
But what I would say is, are a homeless person's only worries sickness and occasional harassment? Because I can think of like 55 other things that you have to worry about if you do not have a home. But when you're just trying to make a point that is using homelessness as a prop, then sure, that's as far as you have to go. And you're like, but you know what, speech, A for effort. Nobody else was, that's not entirely true. This was also the era when Crystal Waters reached the top 10 with Gypsy Woman, She's Homeless. So this was an era when, and also Tracy Spencer had this hit, This House, which is about homelessness. So this was a period when there were just a lot of top 10 hits about people needing housing. Janet Jackson's State of the World, another one.
Right.
So,
kids running away from abusive homes, kids not running away from abusive homes. Like, this was definitely the messaging was there.
So this is actually one of the ways that I have such great affection for Generation X, of which I am just barely a member. We tried to be earnest and solve problems in our shallow, sophomoric way. At least we tried. At least Soul Asylum had that runaway train video with the pictures of the missing kids in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like there was an attempt to sort of carry on the spirit of the 60s. And I think that this period gets that aspect of this period gets erased in the easier story about how it was all about irony and disaffection. Like, those things were there, but that irony and disaffection was in this constant conversation with this earnest belief in change and this belief that somehow MTV and our music could be the pathway to that change. And just as we were also staring at the Sex in the 90s segments that were about the empty soullessness of fucking in New York City, we were also watching the Rock the Vote concerts and thinking, yeah, Tori Amos can help us make the world a better place. So that's why I really have such affection for this song and the whole thing it represents.
Yeah. And, you know, Andrew Hsu started a whole, you know, foundation called Do Something. And it was like, okay, I roll, but like he did it. He tried it. Like, I don't think anybody really had to tell Andrew Hsu, you're not so good at acting. Like, he has to have known.
Right. And like, isn't it better for speech to make a rather clumsy argument about homeless people being wiser than us in many ways? Isn't it better than not talking about it at all? Like, I just feel like at least it's, I have a lot of respect for someone who makes the attempt. And like, sure, Arrested Development never made any songs that were not socially conscious, and that can get a little tiresome, but like, you know, throw one in there from time to time. Great.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I think they also, this part of their, sort of history is sort of blotted out by the fact that People Every Day was in every fucking Toyota commercial for like 5 years.
Right.
And then that sort of takes a soft left into selling out and the preoccupation that is, I think, very Gen X about doing it or not and what right. kinds of doing it are okay and blah, 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 blah. And then you're talking about grunge, which we're not here to do. We're here to talk about hippie hop.
Right. Well, and that actually leads us quite nicely, I think, into Diggable Planets, another very socially conscious hip hop group that utilized jazz samples in their music and also were much denser lyrically. And the members of the Diggable Planets, as is especially apparent in this song, aligned themselves with something called the 5% Nation, which is a black nationalist movement founded that's influenced by Islam, and it has a lot of very complex religious and socio-political ideas, and they were like really going for it in their songs. And some of their other songs that were on the same album that featured Rebirth of Slick really get into questions about like women's right to choose and like societal power structures and things. So Diggable Planets were taking the things that Arrested Development and to some extent PM Dawn were doing, and they were taking them even further lyrically. But I didn't know any of that shit at the time. I just knew that I really liked this song with the cool beat. So this is a great example of a song that went right over my teenage head and wasn't really written for me. This song was written to, I think, exist in two ways. There's the audience like me that was never going to hear the messages and was never going to be part of that community. But then there was the audience that was already thinking about the revolutionary ideas that they were thinking about and was going to feel seen and celebrated. And you know what? Good for fucking them. I feel like if this, if the Diggable Planets had existed in the 60s, they would have been on the FBI's watch list because they have ideas that I think might be considered threatening.
Mm-hmm.
But great. Okay, cool. And again, in the early 90s, you could make a song that sounded as smooth as this, but had a lot of the same political consciousness that was in a more aggressive group like Public Enemy. And that's really interesting about the whole vitality of the hip hop scene at this time, that you could have people were trying to have political arguments in so many ways and through so many different sounds. And I think it's important, of course, and to think about and talk about a group like Public Enemy. Their music is very, very urgent and vibrant and necessary, but it's valuable to remember that the context of their political statements was actually made richer because they were alongside a group like the Diggable Planets, and it just showed the overall health of the political dialogue in hip-hop, mainstream hip-hop at this time. That is my whole prelude to the number 15 peaking Rebirth of Slick. Here's a clip.
Entire hip-hop era was fresh in fact since they started saying Audi. Cubs funks made fat from right beneath my hood. The Pooba of the styles like Miles and shit. Like 60s funky worms with waves and perms. Just sending junky rhythms right down your block. We beat to rap, what key beat to lock. But I'm cool like that. 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 I'm cool. I'm cool.
We beat the chocolates, tap to my raps. She innovates after sweet cat naps.
This just brought me right back. Brought me right back to, but it, weirdly, it brought me back to like indie rock that I was also listening to at the same time. Like
totally.
This song is like a guaranteed sort of like everyone sitting around getting ready to go out, someone rolling a joint on a frisbee, because 93, and it was just like a guaranteed sort of, I mean, it was a little bit of a filler song because we did have the sense, like you were saying, that it wasn't really for us, but that beat was so irresistible and the density of it and sort of finding things in it was so irresistible. And my boyfriend at that time was into like actual jazz, like Ornette Coleman styly, and was very interested in this and Us Three for like how the jazz was being like flowed into the flow. we will get back to that. But this was like, this would go into like Radiohead B-side or Luna's California or like some early Beck we had going on at the same time as this. And just a lot of people wearing a lot of Baja clothing and, you know, boys with very long hair. And it just brings me back to, like, I can picture the exact dorm room in university and like the time of day and what other people were drinking. We were in a clearly Canadian Loganberry phase, I believe.
You know what? I need to end this call.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's what was available at the stud. So
I mean, says the guy who at a theater party was once doing shots of just Midori. So I have no room to talk.
I mean, but like you got punished for that for real. just by doing it.
Ooh, Lord.
Your teeth are still green. But yeah, this has that Far Side vibe to it. That's like you get the feeling that this is not necessarily for you, but it's not for you either. And that it is intended to work on a bunch of different levels. But it is a lot more sort of outward facing than De La Soul. So it's interesting to be talking about these two songs or this like range of songs that are kind of under the same umbrella, but may have very different intents.
Totally.
In the beginning. I also wanted to note, this doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but, I was re-listening to Public Enemy a couple months ago, actually, and realizing that I think they are not given credit for their wit. And
yeah.
I just wanted to put that out there, that when you listen to like the earlier stuff in particular, there is, I mean, sometimes the humor is really dark, but it's like, there is a wit there and a, pride in the wit that I think it's, that part of Public Enemy's catalog is undersold, that it's not all.
Well, and I think that
yelling at you.
I think that it was actually undersold too, because it's harder to dismiss the band as just being angry black men when you have to face the fact that they're witty, thoughtful, very reasonable in their political demands. And if you can just cast them as they're just angry, then it's easier for people who don't want to hear it to dismiss them outright. But you're right that there's like, and when I was saying before, I didn't mean that they were like, I know you weren't saying that I was saying this, but let me just clarify that I don't think that Public Enemy was just an angry band, but they were just more aggressive in their sound. Like,
yeah, for sure.
They were not coming at, like 911 is a joke, is not coming at you with the same sort of like relaxed flow as this.
No, but then a lot of their message songs also are like chair dancers. So
totally.
And they are very deliberately, I think, trying to jam up your signals with like, I feel sort of guilty and weird bugging out to this song. And yet, like, well, then don't make it so bug outable, Public Enemy.
Yeah.
But like, that's the point, that they're forcing you to just like not put what you're thinking about a song on autopilot. But we're not here to talk about Public Enemy today. Maybe in the future, but let us hear.
I'm also thinking about how these messages in these songs are also, they work in a sense because they do have these bug out qualities. Like, for instance, the reason I picked the clip from Rebirth of Slick that I did is because it contains the all time wonderful line, "We be to rap what key be to lock." Like, come on. That's amazing. That's the shit that you are in the rec room at the party, and no matter what you're doing, everyone in the room will stop, shout out that line, and then go back to what they were doing, because that line is so good and you wait for it. And like, the song also just succeeds as pure fucking awesomeness. And also, who doesn't want to just be like, I'm cool like that. I'm cool like that. It's just, you don't have to work hard to memorize it, but it's got a really great attitude that you hope that you can, that you hope you can endow yourself with. Like, the song succeeds as just awesomeness as well. And you're right. Like, if they didn't want us to dance to it, they wouldn't make it so danceable. So you have to think, well, okay, now that they've got us dancing, they actually also want us to think. And I love that shit.
Yeah. It's also good makeout music. I'm just going to leave that here.
I'm sure that you're right. I was at this point in my life, not yet on that road, but I'm sure that you're right.
Yeah, give it a try. Give it a whirl. Report
this
back.
This is also, I'll just lay this here and then we can move on. This is making me think about how Lil Nas X is really picking up the baton of a lot of this music in terms of making music that's really easy to enjoy on a superficial level, but the more you listen is really about some pretty provocative things.
Yeah, and we are open to a Spiritual Heirs episode. So as I said, let us hear from you. We're at Talk Songs on Twitter, and always come to our Patreon page. We have a lot of fun over there. There's extra stuff, and the community is rad. So come on by, patreon.com/mastass. All right, we got one more song left.
We do. So this is the number 9 peaking Cantaloupe, parentheses, Flip Fantasia, by the group Us Three, which was actually like 9 British guys who got together and made a jazz hip hop fusion group. And if you go to YouTube and you look for Us Three interview, there's this really crazy short HBO interview where
it's
they're
so
explaining.
Good.
It's like so trippy. And then they're like, and they're also going to be performing on Dennis Miller Live. And it's like,
you're like,
really,
oh
crazy.
God, Dennis Miller Live. Like, it really is like, oh, you just feel totally destabilized by 90s-osity.
And the one white guy that they're interviewing has so much hair. It's just a lot happening. It's an amazing clip. So Cantaloupe is a reference to Cantaloupe Island, which is the song that is being sampled. And it's just really, I think, a distinct song that would sound fresh even today, Sarah, even though it's built on a very old song. There's just something about this that I think really works. There's an effortlessness to the groove that is so appealing. And without further ado, number 9, here's a clip, Cantaloupe.
Bounce, dance as we dip in the melodic sea. Rhythm keeps flowing and drips to MC. Sweet sugar pop, rocks and pop. You don't stop till the sweet beat drops. I shall improve as I stick and move. Vivid poems recited on top of the groove. Smooth mind, floating like a butterfly. Notes set afloat, sung like a lullaby. Brace yourself. As the beat hits ya, dip, trip, hit, and tease ya.
Oh my God. I never can just listen to a clip. This, I don't know if you remember your first experience with this song. But I had been recommended the album, I forget by whom. I borrowed the CD, Kids Ask Your Parents, brought it back to my dorm room, put it on the changer, Ask Your Parents,
yep.
And like went to sit down on my futon. I sort of like flopped down on my futon, and then a recording from Blue Note Records, Trap. And I sat up and was like, what the fuck is this? More. Yes. Everything positive. This whole album, I just like lived with it in the changer for fucking 3 years, probably. You know how I like a pop music trumpet break, and that's a great one. This is just like, this is the perfect marriage of samples. And Rahsaan Kelly's flow is so sexy.
Yes.
So sexy. I will jump to that jam, boogie woogie jam and slam all day and into the night. And I pulled a clip from Got It Going On, which is another Us Three song from the same album that I just wanted to drop that in here as supporting evidence for my claim that Rahsaan Kelly could Pied Piper me off a cliff, I guess, with his voice. Here is a short clip from Got It Going On, and this is another song that I like just drop little snippets of it into my everyday speech. And I think people probably think that's very weird, much as they probably think that about everything else I do. Here's a clip.
The dope threads and the $100 kicks, making power moves, so get off my nine. I won't say it cause it's crystal, it's clear. I get the job done each and every year. Back in school, I used to act the fool, but I rocked an 8 average, so everything's cool. Tool, my pencil, the mic's my utensil. I read the mic check and you can write that in stencil. So you wonder why I made it and your shit is going wrong. Ayo, true, I got it going on.
Oh, and then my God, it's so good.
And then at the end, there's this break, and like the sample is like the drum, boom, boom, ptch, the drum, boom, boom, ptch. And when my answer to a question is the drum, I have to say it like that and try to provide a little LP crackle also, because I'm a fulfilled person who's fun at parties and totally normal. Anyway.
I have such a deep affection for any song that will use being a straight A student as a flex.
And I would like to apologize. I hate this for myself. To Brian Austin Green for repeatedly over the course of decades making fun of him for rhyming pencil and utensil. Because, I mean, at worst, he did it because he saw us three do it first. Oh, but that time I was like, oh, that's unfortunate. You know what? Who cares? I still love the song. Oh, it's so good. But it's really also amazing that, like, this is the sort of wonderful miracle of pop music and why we do this podcast, is a song's ability to get a sort of chronically hungover 21-year-old to sit straight up on her lumpy futon and be like, oh
yeah.
And then just like reading the liner notes, listening to it over and over again, like making notes to like go down to the Rec-X and be like, do you know what these samples are? Can you find me this album? And then I like went to my boyfriend's room and I'm like, do you have XYZ? And he was, like I said, an Ornette Coleman guy, so he didn't have these like piano jazz things, and we didn't have the internet really yet back then, so I couldn't look it up, but like this was the intensity of this experience. And always a pleasure to revisit it, especially for quote work, which this podcast seldom feels like. I'm just gonna say,
but you're so right that there is something really exhilarating about music that forces you to care like this.
Yeah.
And I will say, again, to go back to PM Dawn, I really did have that experience with their music because it was so feminine in its masculinity. It was just like, it was just so genderless in a way, and that I found very exciting. And again, yeah, like I wanted more. I wanted to listen. I wanted to think about it. I wanted to pay attention. And I totally get what you're saying too about the liner notes, where you're like, okay, wait, who is this? Who is this on the background vocals? What is it? I have to know more. I totally feel you. Well, Sarah, yeah. I have to say, I feel like hippie hop ended up being a fantastic entree into our exploration of beats around the bush.
I think so too. And as I said, we are here for your comments. We are here for your suggestions. You can send us like sound snippets if you want to be heard on the air. Let us know if we have permission to do that. But you can follow us on Twitter and or DM us. That's at Talk Songs. We'd love to have you over on the Patreon for more discussion. And upcoming episodes include a deep dive into Def Jeff, Salt and Peppa. What else have we got?
We've got a blitz of Salt and Peppa hits. we've got a look at the mysteries of Tone Loc. And we will explain what we mean by that when we get to that episode. We have
Tone Loc. we're traveling to Delphi, and we're asking, I don't even know, Ace Ventura, who was kept in a jar in a cave, with our Tone Loc.
And then when we say, who brought Tone Loc here? We'll say, nobody. And then a Cyclops will be mad about it. And then Tone Loc will grab the underbelly of a giant sheep and ride to freedom.
Oh my God. Oh, we've lost it again.
And we've got some other episodes coming that will probably also end in this level of chicanery and buffoonery. But again, yes, patreon.com/mastest, Twitter at TalkSongs. We really want to hear from you. And now I'm going to go listen to some more Us Three.
Me too. Or me three, I guess.
Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, that's me, and Sarah D. Bunting.
That's me. I also edit the podcast, which is a proud member of the Bleav Network. Learn more at bleav.com.
To learn more about us, submit song requests, get a pop chart reading, or buy a Mastis book, visit our website at markandsarahtalkaboutsongs.com. You'll also find all of our social media links there, too.
That's Mark and Sarah, with an H, talkaboutsongs.com. And for even more content and access the Mastass Happy Hour, become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/mastass.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Bleav. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Bleav.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.